Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Tom Fortino, our friend, founder, and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group. You listen to him Sunday mornings, I hope, with Felice Glink, 7 a.m. on the show called This Week in Wealth. Hey, Tom, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going well today. How are you doing, John?
Pretty good. How about that NASDAQ today, huh?
Yeah, it's rallying today. I mean, it relies on tech. So, I mean, last year it was down 30%. This year, it's doing pretty well, especially today. So,
yeah, because it's a good thing. NVIDIA, they make chips, right? Computer chips.
They do. Yeah, they're the fastest chips out there. So they're rallying today, and that's I guess a good thing.
Well, it is.
If you own it, yeah.
Well, but you know, Terry Savage said the other day, stop picking stocks. She didn't say that verbatim, but she said too often 5% of the market will drive, say, an index, the NASDAQ or the S&P, mm-hmm. the Dow. Sometimes it'll be just a handful of stocks that are driving it, and you don't know which ones. So she said just be the market, don't beat the market. Do you agree with that?
Well, here's the thing. Where I would agree with that is when you take a look at the overall market, it's really kind of a risk versus trying to pick stocks, right? So that's really what it comes down to. If you look at the S&P as an example, right? You can buy an equal weighted S&P, by the way, an ETF, an exchange traded fund. Because the breadth of the market we're talking about is Terry saying that a few stocks drive it, and
yeah.
The Microsofts, the Apples. But if you look at an equally weighted S&P year to date, up 0.5%. If you look at the S&P as a whole, it's up 7%. So there are typically a few stocks that do drive it. We know that. You know, just two stocks account for 16% of the S&P. So yeah, you do have to be careful. But if you want to try to on the periphery own some stocks like the NVIDIA's or some other stocks you think that are going to do well, you can add some value to your portfolio.
How are you scoring the debt ceiling negotiations? I'm reading today that they're maybe $70-80 billion apart, the president and the Congress, and that seems to be manageable. And yet the market mm-hmm. does seem to be I don't know if spooked is the right word, but what was the rating of the U.S. government, of the U.S. economy, is down right now?
Well, they've come out. They've kind of warned, you know, whether you look at Fitch or Moody's or any of these rating services, they're saying, look, we may come and make a decision here to downgrade the debt. I mean, the reality is this has never happened in the history of the United States where they've defaulted on the debt. And again, the reality is, there is no need to default on the debt. If you prioritize, the money is there, right? So they can do it. I don't think that's going to happen. It's just we've been here before, and unfortunately it creates some volatility and some nervousness in the market. We see it. It's unfortunate. I think the bigger issue is the overall debt. You know, they can come to grips on this debt ceiling, but you have $32 trillion and growing. That's a problem.
That's why I don't mind them holding the president's feet to the fire a little bit. And I know that if it comes to the 11th hour, the Republicans in the House have to concede because we can't go over the cliff. But by the same token, I wouldn't mind the administration cutting some spending to accommodate these people.
Well, you know, we have to. I think it was someone phrased that there's a four-letter word that is a problem here. It's called math. We look at these numbers. There's already been $1 trillion added to the debt already just this fiscal year. You have a third of the debt that's going to be rolling over in a year at higher rates, another two-thirds in 5 years. And, you know, these numbers just get so crazy, and it's the old saying, you know, you go bankrupt very slowly and then all at once. And so we've got to be careful here. That doesn't include all the other debt. And so something needs to get resolved here. In the short term, you know, raise the ceiling. But in the long term, we've got to, you know, just to service the debt, it's approaching $600 billion just to service the debt. Now, two things are happening. The debt is increasing, the value of the amount of the debt, and so are the interest rates to service the debt. This is not good.
One last thing about that. Are you guessing that the Fed is going to hold pat, that they aren't going to raise rates?
I do. I think I think, you know, I don't think there's been a lot of surprises. Maybe people that were a year ago that were guessing what the Fed was going to do over this time. I don't know how many people said they were going to go at 5% in short order. But I think each month when we come up to a Fed decision, I don't think there's been a lot of surprises. And things like we've seen jobs slow down, the three-month average is slowing down, housing prices, median home prices, mortgage application. So there's a lot of reasons why I think they're going to just sit tight.
Okay. We'll talk money again another day. And I just wanted to publicly also thank you for what the Alpha Wealth Group is doing. We asked some of our partners here if they could help lead on our effort to raise some money to send some kids to camp. The City Kids Camp campaign is going to crest. We're going to tie it all up on June 8th with a little mini radiothon. And when we reached out to you, you said, yep, how can I help? So thank you for being part of that broadcast of ours on June 8th, Tom.
Well, thank you, John. Thanks to you, John. You do the hard part. The easy part is what we did. So thank you.
Fair enough. That's Tom Fortino from the Alpha Wealth Group. And I'm just saying, hey, here's a great idea. Let's send kids to camp. Tom Fortino, and maybe you will be giving to that cause. You can go to WGNradio.com/camp to find out more on WGN Radio. So it was on Twitter that DeSantis announced his candidacy for president, and it did not go entirely smoothly.
All right, great. Looks like we're ready to go here. All right, I'd like to welcome Governor DeSantis for this historic.
We're just trying to get it going because there's so many people.
That's unfortunate. All right, I'd like to never seen this before.
Welcome, Governor DeSantis for this historic. We're just trying to get it going because it's
hello.
So many people.
Hello. So that was Ron DeSantis and not Ron DeSantis, the governor, and of course Elon Musk in that kind of novel launch of the campaign. Here to talk a little bit about that and tech as well. We are joined again by CNET's Bree Fowler, who is a senior reporter there. Bree, were you one of the people that was in or got kicked out of that site last night?
Yeah, actually, I tried to watch it the first time they tried. And, you know, I waited, and there was kind of that weird background noise. And then they kicked everyone out and started a second broadcast, and it finally got going. And I think I actually missed the beginning of it. So it was definitely interesting when you look at it purely from a tech point outside of politics. Lots of bumps there, lots of glitches, and you can definitely see how Twitter may not quite have the infrastructure to be doing something like this anymore.
Fair enough. But, you know, I don't know how embarrassing it is, say, for the campaign, although here you are aligning your, you know, it's sort of like the tour bus having a flat tire. But the reason the tour bus had a flat tire was there were so many people on the bus. So
right.
Maybe Elon Musk and Ron DeSantis can salvage that out of this. If you get a million people on a site at once, yeah, maybe you don't have the infrastructure for it, but isn't that a nice problem to have?
Well, they didn't quite have a million people. When I was on there, it was about 600,000 or 700,000. And, you know, honestly, I expected more, especially seeing how, you know, a lot of people that are to the right in politics have been gravitating towards Twitter lately. And then when they let people back in, we're talking about, you know, less than 200,000 people. So I, you know, it seems like something that they should have planned better for and it should have had their ducks in a row. But Elon Musk has cut about 75% of payroll. And if you don't have people minding the ship and making sure that things are running smoothly, you just can't deal with events like that.
So maybe what happened last night says more about Twitter than DeSantis, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, once he got going, it was the general stump speech that everyone expected. But, you know, the tech and the problems with it and with Twitter really stole the show.
It reminded me a little bit, though, of when everybody tried to buy Taylor Swift tickets. And I hear what you're saying, that maybe the scale wasn't as massive as it could have been. But if you're flirting with disaster, if you ask everybody to do the same thing at once on any platform, on any technology.
Absolutely. I mean, especially with the Taylor Swift thing, I mean, you're not just dealing with people, you're dealing with bots and people that are trying to snap those up and scalp those tickets. And, you know, that was a massive amount of traffic that they had to deal with and, you know, definitely weren't prepared for that.
I was wondering out loud if, in fact, the marriage between, say, the DeSantis campaign and Elon Musk and Twitter would be quite advantageous to DeSantis, given how impactful social media can be in politics these days. What's your thought about that, Bree?
Well, I mean, Twitter has definitely been a tool for all kinds of politicians of all, you know, varying political stripes over the years. Twitter is not really seeing the same kind of broad demographic of people anymore. I mean, a lot of media has pulled out. You know, there are concerns about, you know, free speech, but at the same time, you know, they're letting people back in that clearly abuse the free speech privilege before. So, you know, I don't know if it's good for reaching people outside of his base so much, but, you know, any kind of publicity and any kind of, you know, this is free. These aren't ads that you have to buy on TV, and social media is definitely a huge role in any campaign these days.
The Surgeon General issued a warning this week about what?
About social media and kids who are not voters. But, you know, I feel like this isn't breaking news to those of us with kids and teens that are on social media. They're saying that, you know, this could have detrimental effects on their mental health and well-being. The thing is, we just don't really know even now what it could do. Obviously, you know, there are kids that are traumatized by social media, but there's also kids, you know, who need social media to connect with communities that they may not have where they live. So, you know, it goes both ways, and it just highlights how hard it is for parents to kind of police this kind of stuff these days.
Yeah, no kidding. U.S. Surgeon General with that warning on Tuesday, and now I'm out of time. Bree Fowler is the senior reporter at CNET. It's always nice to talk to you. Bree, thanks for your heads up on all of this.
Great to be here.
Saturday is National Italian Beef Day. In a little bit, you'll be hearing more about the Chicago Food Stop, which is hosting a festive celebration in honor of National Italian Beef Day, and how can you get a free Italian beef sandwich? But before we get to that, let's talk to Chris Pacelli, who is the owner of Al's Beef. In fact, it says here, Chris, his grandfather invented the Italian beef sandwich.
This is true.
How can that be true? It's an Italian beef sandwich. It's okay. A sandwich with some Italian beef on there. That ever
well,
needed to be...
Well, how do you think it started?
I mean... That seems,
there's a building with a roof on it. Somebody had to
somebody
put the
had
roof
to make
on
the
it.
First building with a roof on it. Hey, the wheel wasn't a wheel before somebody said, oh, let's make a
yes.
round stone.
There
but,
you go.
But that's a great concept because as integral as the Italian beef sandwich is to Chicago culture, it was your family that came up with the idea.
Actually, my grandfather.
And so what constitutes an Italian beef sandwich?
Well, thinly sliced spices. And it sits in its own juice. And then when you, the idea of Italian beef is actually the thin slicing and trimmed everything off of it, no fat, no gristle. So when you bite into it, you don't chew and like a rubber band or something.
Yeah.
And the spicing, each company has their own taste. But Italian beef actually started with the idea of extra thin sliced Italian beef piled on a French roll and the spice and then the jardiniera, the sweet peppers were added to that.
What do people get wrong about the Italian beef?
They mix it up with like they'll think it's a cheesesteak or idea, which is not true because cheesesteak is fried. We cook our products. And they'll think it's the French dip.
Yep.
They think it's that, and that's a whole different item.
But do you dip? Is it proper to dip an Italian?
Well, it's in its own juice as it starts off.
Right.
Everything. So when we make this, it takes 3.5 hours to cook it. And at the end of the 3.5 hours, we have to cool it down. And we don't use it till 24 hours later. Then when we take it out of the refrigerator, it has to be around 38 degrees internally. And then we start trimming and taking every bit of something that you wouldn't want to eat off of it.
Yeah.
And then the idea where my grandfather came in with this is cut it so thin that when you put it in back in its own juice, the hot juice, whatever's there that's not supposed to be there would melt into the juice and create a better broth. Okay? So that's the whole idea of this. So what you can't get everything because it's a piece of meat, and it's like having a steak. You're always going to have some fat on it.
Right.
So,
well, that's the marbling. That's the a beautiful
idea
thing.
Well, true. The idea of that is to get rid of, you know, you use that to cook it, but then you don't need it afterwards. So a lot of the, by the time we're done, by from beginning to end, we lose 50%.
No kidding.
Yes.
So how has Al's been so successful over the years?
Consistency is a good secret to business. If you're consistent with your product, you started off and everybody liked it, then they're going to keep coming back to you. And then they tell others.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been around since the actually over 100 years. I mean, the sandwich has been in existence, but... actually, the first beef stand was created with my uncle back in 1938. His name is Al. That's where we created the name from. And so he started off as, you got to understand the 30s Italians, you know how the story goes. It's a little bit of gangsters and... So when he got,
Wait a minute. Don't stop right there. So tell me as much of that as you want to tell me about this Uncle Al and the gangsters.
Well, lapse of time. So, you know, no, everybody's dead. So nobody can go to jail now.
Okay. So I don't know what we're talking about here, but you have a rich history.
Yes. My uncle, he did some time in jail.
All right.
So when he got out, naturally, that's all he knew was the other guys like him. You know, they didn't meet the mayor or nothing in jail, you know what I mean? Yet.
Today they might, but that's a different... Yeah. Or what the governor, anyway.
What do they say about the governors in Illinois? They're the ones that create the license plates.
So he comes out, and then
he comes out, and he's with these guys, the same type of people, and they want to open up a bookie place. So they got to get permission from the mob to do that. But they end up opening up one. And my uncle said, I got a great front. We'll do what my father did. We'll sell beef sandwiches. So out on the street, they created this little stand and started doing that back in 1938. Well, my uncle was always in trouble. So my father and my mother had to bail him out. And they became his partner. He ends up buying the bookies out. Because they can go anywhere and make a phone call.
Yeah.
And it started being lucrative right after that. You know, these.
The beef sandwiches.
Well, people, because nobody, and for the first 10 years, there was no other beef stands.
It just seems ironic to me, though, mm-hmm. that the front became the profit center. The bookies
yeah, right.
go away. And what do you know? As it turns out, you're actually making good sandwiches.
So, you know, to himself, he says, why should I take a chance of going to jail, making money legitimate?
Yeah.
You know? So that's how he ended up just doing this. He was always a gambler, but he was always in trouble.
Well, I suppose the restaurant business is a gamble, too.
Oh, sure it is.
So what does an Italian beef sandwich at Al's taste like?
Well, you got to eat it to find that out. But we have 17 different spices, including natural garlic. We don't use any liquid garlic or anything like that. So our... Our beef is cooked for 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
It's a well-done piece of meat when we're done with it.
What's the recipe, the 17 spices?
Well, they're in there. Everybody asks me that.
Yeah, no kidding. Have you sold that on the side?
No, like, you can't.
About that. I could buy Al's seasoning at Jewel mm-hmm. as a side hustle.
Well... You could do that, but we're more interested in our stores, you know.
The final product.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess there's a market for anything.
Well, I don't know. That's,
well,
But it does seem to me like sometimes when businesses, I remember when Krispy Kreme Donuts said, I know, let's put all of the donuts in the Jewel, and then they lost the immediacy and the mm-hmm. uniqueness of buying it at the restaurant. You wanted to get a Krispy Kreme donut at the
came
right off that conveyor belt. It was fresh. It was hot. And you loved it.
Yes.
So maybe you want to preserve the uniqueness of the product at the store.
We tried to do that into grocery stores, and it was never the right way.
Didn't go so well.
Yeah, I just abandoned ship on that many, many years ago.
Six restaurants throughout Chicagoland right now?
Right now, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We're all up to Niles. We have one on Wells in Ohio, the other one in Wrigleyville. We have 183rd in Harlem, which is Tinley Park.
Yep.
And then we have one on Western and Lincoln or Diversey, yeah.
Yeah, Diversey.
You know,
okay.
The six corners.
I know
there.
Where you are. I know where you are. Okay, so tomorrow, Saturday, no, not tomorrow, but this Saturday, May 27th, is National Italian Beef Day, which sounds like something you guys made up. Did you guys make up National Italian Beef Day?
The lady that works for us, she created that idea.
Smart lady. Okay, so more about that a little later on. But nice to meet you, and congratulations, and happy in advance National Italian Beef Day.
Well, thank you.
So, Bones, can I call you Bones?
That's my nickname, yeah.
Fair enough. Thanks for joining us today. That's Chris Pacelli, the owner of Al's Beef on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Okay, more business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Amazon is slowing its roll on expansion in the Chicago area. The company has put plans on hold for two new local warehouses. Amazon says it will not occupy recently built delivery stations in Chicago's Bridgeport neighborhood and in suburban Addison. It put both locations up for sublease, but says they may be utilized in the future. The Bridgeport location includes 112,000 square feet at 2420 South Halsted and would have employed 200 people. According to Crain's data, Amazon is the largest private sector employer in the Chicago area with nearly 29,000 employees. Employees of Chicago's Peggy Notobart Nature Museum have voted to form a union. The final vote was 31-4, with two votes being thrown out over management challenges. The museum is the latest to unionize in an ongoing push involving the city's cultural institutions. The National Labor Relations Board still has to certify the election. The workers chose Chicago Academy of Sciences Workers United as their official bargaining representative. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Remember, where's the beef? Well, here's more beef. It's time for the business of food. And Steve Alexander.
Mm-hmm. And let's begin with three words I like to hear. Free Italian beef. And here are more words I like to hear. The Chevy Silverado HD, our sponsor today. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, free Italian beef?
Yes, free Italian beef.
She is Nicolette Peters of World Business Chicago, helping celebrate National Italian Beef Week and Day by giving away Italian beef sandwiches from Al's Number One.
Yeah.
And this is happening tomorrow and Saturday at the Chicago Food Stop. That's in the Hancock where Best Buy used to be, right?
Yes, yes, it is where the Best Buy used to be.
So?
Free Italian beef sandwiches between 11:30 to 2 p.m.
Tomorrow and Saturday.
It'll be Al's Beef. Chris Pacelli will be there. His grandfather actually invented the Italian beef sandwich back in 1918. So we're happy to celebrate Italian Beef Day with the OG Italian beef, I guess, in Chicago.
Nicolette is a relative newbie to Chicago, and her Italian beef journey started by watching TV.
It was kind of funny. I had never really heard of the Italian beef until I watched The Bear. It came out like right when I moved here.
We're firing 76 beefs, 34 chickens, okay?
And I was so excited to go, you know, try an Italian beef sandwich.
And?
My first time, I actually went to Mr. Beef, which was the shop that The Bear is based off of.
Make sandwiches! Don't stop!
Yes, sir.
It was super good. I got it with the hot giardiniera. It was definitely messy.
Yeah, they can be messy, which is why Chris Pacelli of Al's Beef has this recommendation.
When you eat it, you got to do the Italian stance. Arms on the counter and your feet back, and you dig your face into it. We give you a lot of napkins.
Chris will be on stage at 2 o'clock Saturday to share stories about the history of the Italian beef, which goes back to his grandpa inventing it in 1917. He'll be good. He is a colorful guy, and he knows how to tell a great story. That's at 2 o'clock. Free Italian Beefs tomorrow and Saturday from 11:30 till 2 at the Chicago Food Stop in the Hancock Building.
While supplies last.
On the food calendar, today is National Wine Day, and it's National Brown Baguette Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Well, if we're talking beef in summer, let's talk beer, too. Here's Evan Morris, co-founder of Phase 3 Brewing Company. Phase3brewing.com is the website. And this is part of our Your Hometown series. So let's talk first to Evan. Hey, Evan, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. Doing well, man. Thank you for having me.
I don't normally drink beer during the show, but I did pop one of your IPAs just so I knew what I was talking about. I've got the DDH Perfect. Protocol. Is that what this one is I'm drinking?
Yes, it is. That's a great one to start with. That's actually one of the first hazy IPAs that we ever released as a company about 4 years ago.
Talk a little bit about the company. So 4 years is, and you guys are in Lake Zurich, right?
Yeah, correct. So our story goes back quite a bit further, actually, about 2006, when my business partner, Sean Burns, started working at the host stand at the Ram Restaurant and Brewery in Schaumburg, actually. Fell in love with a young lady there, and then eventually fell in love with me as well and became his best friend. We started there at the Ram Phase 1 and then moved on to another brewery. That was our Phase 2. And then opened up Phase 3 here in beautiful Lake Zurich, Illinois, in March of 2019.
Phase 3 of your partnership. And so you guys decided to do your own brew. Is that it?
Correct, yeah. So, you know, at that point, I had run all the general management kind of operation side of things. Sean had been making some really good beer. And Brittany was doing an amazing job designing labels and merchandise and really kind of putting a face to everything that we were doing. So when it came time for us to chase our dreams and really kind of focus on our own families and, you know, creating awesome jobs for people, we decided to make the leap. Found a brewery out here in Lake Zurich that actually had some additional capacity since we didn't have all of the capital to go out and necessarily build our own brewery. So we started brewing into some of their empty tanks. And then in roughly January of 2020, we actually purchased this location from them and all the equipment and officially laid roots here in town.
What a perfect time to start a new business. January of 2020.
It seems that way at the time. Yeah.
for two months, it was brilliant. So yeah. Then what happened, Evan?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of funny how that story goes because we had just received the building permits to start construction on the tap room here in Lake Zurich that first week in March. And then, of course, the world came to a screeching halt the next week. And we decided, okay, we're going to hold off on that. But, you know, do we sit on this money that we've saved for the construction or do we kind of double down and believe in ourselves and our team that we have here? And that's what we did. We invested that money in the equipment and got really creative with how we were, you know, doing things over here. The city was just absolutely phenomenal to work with. I feel extremely fortunate for that, how business friendly and business forward they've been over our time here. We were doing, you know, drive-through releases and it looked like a Portillo's parking lot out here on a Saturday afternoon. You know, it was we made the best of it. But yeah, so we got through that and we were mainly distribution at that time. So, you know, our partners like Binny's and the Open Bottle out in Tinley Park, you know, they were all hopping because people were sitting at home and needed a beer while they were doing it. So
Evan Morris is the co-founder of Phase 3 Brewing Company in Lake Zurich. We got a minute and a half left. Let's just talk about what's the signature beer, or is there a signature flavor? Is there a kind of beer that you guys are known for, Evan?
Yeah, great question. So we do a really good job of kind of hitting a slurry of different styles, and that goes back to our days at the Ram. So hazy IPAs are what pay the bills, like that protocol you're drinking right now, John.
Yeah, yeah,
nice. But then we're known internationally for our barrel aged stout program. We have about 350 bourbon barrels that are aging with beer in them. So that's a big piece of what we do. But then we've also invested a lot of time, energy, and passion into our lager program and really focus on a lot of the classic styles that are out there as well. So We're beer drinkers just like everybody else, and we don't like to drink the same thing every day. Sean's quite the mad scientist, so he makes sure that if we're going to brew it, we're going to brew some of the best anybody's ever had of that style.
Mm. It's competitive out there, isn't it, Evan?
Yeah, it is. You know, our next big opportunity that we see here is a second location. So we're actually throwing nails at a pretty good rate out in Elmhurst. We're opening up our second location at 494 South Spring Road. That will be a full-blown tap room and kitchen. We'll be able to come in and enjoy a pint of beer along with, you know, appetizer, entree, and dessert. So we're super excited to bring that to Chicagoland.
Thanks for being part of our show today. Evan Morris is the co-founder of Phase 3 Brewing Company. Your hometown today is Lake Zurich, and good luck on that second location.
Awesome. Thanks, John. Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah, I'm just sipping just a little bit of it. And that DDH protocol, I'll just read the label here, double dry hopped, double India pale ale. And I believe the ABV on this is 8.0. Yeah, so I'm not going to have a lot of that right now.